Twisted Roots by A.G. Parker. Read by A.G. Parker. Chapter 24. He turned away, and suddenly she thought about the old children's story, where the stupid girl opens the box that God gave her, and all the evils of the world fly out, except hope, which stays at the bottom. And she wondered what hope was doing in there in the first place, in with all the bad things. Then the answer came to her, and she wondered how she could have been so stupid. Hope was in there, because it was evil too, probably the worst of them all, so heavy with malice and pain that it couldn't drag itself out of the opened box. K.J. Parker, Sharps. The body in the containment twitched, then lay still. Tears rolled down Jacob's cheeks, though he was barely aware of them. Somewhere amidst the blood and chaos of her face, Layla's lips moved and fingers jerked, and the barrier which supported Jacob's pounding fists disappeared, tumbling him onto the grass beside Layla. "Lay?" A faint and pained sigh rattled from her ribcage. "Layla, God, I..." He fumbled for words, for something to do. He tried so fiercely to be able to get in and hold her, protect her, and now he didn't know what to do. "Please," he breathed. Other voices drifted in. "Jacob, love, come on." "Mum." He looked around, bewildered, shocked. I don't know what to do. I know, love." His mother took him gently into her arms and led him away. Lorna began to manoeuvre Layla's body into the open doorway. The rock and the ruin above were left quietly to their own devices in the dark, silent field. Piles of flowers, cards, gifts and foodstuff blocked the doorway. Inside, the kitchen was strewn once again with scraped clean baking trays and half-eaten dishes. The house suffered in its neglect, but its inhabitants were at no risk of going hungry. After they had returned to their respective homes, the villagers had whispered and wept and huddled together to offer thanks to the 15-year-old girl who lived on the outskirts of the village and had saved their lives. Though no one quite knew how or what from. When no one answered the cottage door, they left their parcels and gratitude on the steps and went back to their jobs and families and televisions and transient desires. They forgot. Having done what she could to heal Layla, Lorna had returned to the ruins and stood alone, a silent sentry. For 2 days, she had monitored the containment charm surrounding the rock and ensured it held, returning every third hour to do her duty. She took her role as atonement, guarding the witch and Violet, who were locked in each other and trapped in their half-life, silently. Sometimes, the witch spoke softly to Lorna and pleaded with her, begged to make a deal, offered Lorna her sister back, alive. But Lorna never wavered. Confronted with her greatest desire, she found it had been false, and that what she really wanted was her sister's peace. Then the witch cursed and stamped and yowled and threatened to break her sister's body into miserable ragged pieces. Lorna bit her lip and felt the pain and tasted the blood as it spooled in her mouth. But it covered the sting of her sister's limbs dancing in obedience to the witch. As soon as she was able to walk again, Layla met her at the rock. "It's the last night of the new moon. Your mother..." "I know. It needs to be tonight. You should say goodbye." Layla nodded and then said, I think we need to talk. All of us." The group gathered in the dwindling sunlight in the living room of Layla's cottage. Elliot was propped up on the sofa, a scaffolding of poultices and splints supporting his injuries. They listened to Layla, but what they heard took them far from their instincts. "Our ancestors couldn't kill the witch because of the darkness that lay in their own hearts. They harboured and nurtured their own violence and fear, and by doing so they kept her alive. Don't you see? She thrives on it. She'll never be gone until we've found a better way. We need to deprive her of what she craves, what she survives on. It doesn't always have to be violence. It doesn't always have to be done with violence." The room held silent in front of her. Jacob pushed himself away from where he had been leaning against the fireplace. He opened his mouth to speak, closed it, snorted and walked out of the door to the kitchen. Lorna looked after him but bit her tongue. Layla crossed the floor and lowered her weight onto the floor next to her father. Weegan? But before anything else could be said, Jacob stormed back into the room. My dad is dead. This isn't some fairy tale where wishing on some magic star is going to help you, Layla. This thing isn't going to roll over because you ask it nicely. I felt it inside me. I know what she thinks, how she works. We need to kill it, and that takes violence. It just does. Because if we're not brave enough to do that, then how many more people are going to die, huh? You'd be okay with that, would you? His rage came out raw. You need to grow up, Layla. This is how the world works. This is... Elliot raised his head and spoke, his voice hoarse from his scarred lungs. She's right. What? Wait, are you seriously going to listen to this? I got possessed twice because of you. My dad is dead. And so are a lot of people, Jacob, including Layla's mother. Elliot's voice was soft, low. This needs to end. Destroying her body won't end it. Layla's right. History's proven that. The witch is in pain. We need to change her, make her something that isn't a threat. Remember, he took a juddering breath. I felt her too. I know what it's like. And just how do we do that? Layla inhaled and, readied, let her idea slip from her mouth. I want to take her to the ancient hearth. I want to listen to what she has to say. Chapter 25. I awoke one night to find the sage's son within my bed. I reached for curses, but my tongue was bound, his hands so pale in the night, trapping my words. I felt him through every move, but could not grasp his hair and wrench it from his head, nor tear the flesh from his pinning me bones. So I cast my eyes aside and slipped into a twilight land. That night, I broke in two. The tree, the witch, the outcast, the girl. They gathered at the rock that night. Layla kindled the flames and stepped into the isolation of the space where Violet and the witch were held. Her mother's wretched face sneered up at her from where she sat. What now, child? Layla ignored her and spread the charm to encompass the fire. She knelt at its edge and blew softly into its heart, allowing the flames to rise and broaden their grasp. We're going to take a journey to the Elder Lands, where we're equal. I want to talk. The witch spat into Layla's face. You still don't know who you are, do you? Layla tried not to falter. She steadied her hands and grew the flame. I won't go back to that place. They exiled me. They left me in the wilds, alone. I shall not return to their lands. The witch flew at Layla, using Layla's own mother's arms to lash out at her. But Layla carried on. She drew the fire outward until it filled the dome, consuming the figures within it. Layla heard her father's shouts and then fell through the fire into something like sleep. The touch of cold woke her in the Elder Lands. The pine forest was dark and lit only by twilight on snow. Footsteps led away from where she lay, toward the darkness of the trees, to a point beyond which Layla could see. There was no light burning where the stone entrance of the roundhouse should be, but Layla thought she could make out its rough silhouette in the dim undertones of night. Cutting through the scent of wood smoke was the clarity of cold and pine. And something else. It clung to the air as though shredded bits of it hung like drapes from the branches in starlight. A black void in the sky rushed toward her. Instinct brought her arms up to cover her face, but the expected blow never came. The crow landed on the snow beyond Layla's feet, but remained silent. Layla knelt and returned the crow's steel gaze. It seemed to survey her, taking time to cock its head and peer at her angles as though examining her. Satisfied, it flew toward the pines, signalling without sound for Layla to follow. She got to her feet and followed into the dark the fluttering of wings and the hollows in the snow left by the witch's feet, though she knew nothing of what awaited her there. As she walked amongst the trees, the darkness grew. It seemed to cloak the forest in thick black ink and stifle the air into noxious clouds. The mist drew in close around her. I could kill you here, little one. The voice came from everywhere at once. My power is strong here. I could burn you where you stand. But you won't. The silence spread, uneasy. I warned you. I wanted to give you freedom, help you find rest, Layla said. The elders will help you. The elders are responsible for the violence spun upon the world. They did this. They made me. They must suffer. I did this for us. You must know who you are. The words amplified until Layla felt her eardrums would burst. It's time for you to remember. Layla tried to stop the sound with her hands clasped over her ears, burying her head into her body, but the roar bled through. The world began to shake. Heavy slides of snow crashed down from trees and dead boughs creaked and snapped. The earth thundered beneath her, and vast pines toppled and smacked to the ground. Layla screamed into her arms. Silence's reign returned abruptly. Then footsteps, the smell of dirt, the sound of breath. Layla looked down at her toes. They were no longer dug into snow, but rather buried into brown earth. She looked up and saw flickerings of posts and thatch and curved walls. This was not the roundhouse. It seemed older, different. Firelight from the hearth caught the rough shape of a sleeping figure amidst a mass of straw. The footsteps hesitated. A shadow crept in. It stole over to the bed and pressed a hand to the mouth of the sleeper. Layla watched as the girl woke and her eyes flashed, terrified at the intruder. She appeared younger than Layla, although the man's hand was large and covered such a vast portion of her face that Layla could not make out her features. The fire flickered light onto small shoulders and a slender neck as the shadow gave a low laugh and pressed the girl back onto the mattress.
My tribe is grateful for the hospitality your people have shown us, but I might press for one last act of kinship.
Layla watched as he reached under the blanket that covered the girl. She shrank back and her child's hands grasped and scrabbled at his arm. The muscles flecked and twitched under her desperation, but he did not let go. He rumbled that low laugh again and, with his free hand, began to uncover himself. Layla tried to stop him. She tried to scream, but she found that her body had no impact on that world. Her voice made no sound. All she could do was watch. He did not rush. The girl's eyes slid away and into the fire. Layla couldn't watch, but this was what she was there for, to witness, to see the pain that the witch needed her to know. Once he'd finished, the man left the hut. The girl lay quiet as the embers died. Earth and rafter wheeled, and when Layla could focus again, the girl stood before the elders of the clan.
A great misdeed was done. The man who took so much from you was filled with pain and ruled by fear. That same fear has corrupted you. This clan cannot be home to anything that harbours such pain. For aeons, we have valued peace above all else. You are invited to step out across the plains, that you may shed your fear for the peace of death. Should you refuse, you will be exiled from our lands.
We are assured that you will make the right choice.
The elder turned away, and the tribe parted, a sea of fabric and colour and home lining the first steps of the path toward the bleakness of the barren tundra.
Mother!
The girl reached out to clasp the cloak of her mother. The woman snatched the fabric away and kept her face absent from view. The girl wobbled slightly on her feet, and Layla heard her breath catch in her throat. Layla scanned the faces in the crowd, impassive, stony, and not one was recognisable. Had she been here? Had this been her doing? The girl drew herself up to full height and straightened her head. Her feet trod firm along the line of clansmen. Once she had passed their limits, the girl turned, her chin stuck out and proud.
If hurt is what I am, and corrupted is what I am, and pain is what I am, then may it be so. Let me be nothing but the embodiment of these things that have entered and defiled my body. I will seek those corrupted, those hurt and in pain, those embraced by fear, and I will do your bidding. If you say that I shall spread nothing but fear, then so be it. No, I am made by your hands.
It seemed in that moment as though something separated itself from the girl. Something small. A spark. No one else, it seemed, could see it, but the girl did. And Layla did. As Layla tried to make sense of what she was seeing, the girl plucked the firefly-like light from the air and smothered it in her pocket. The girl left the lands of her clan, and Layla followed, half running to keep up. Ice caught in her lungs and shredded the soles of her feet. She felt herself staggering, although the girl didn't waver as she walked on through the snow, across the icy tundra, leaving red footprints in an ocean of white. The world flew away around her. Snow and ice and rock tumbled into forest, and the frozen earth was hard when it stopped her fall. Images drained from one realm into the other, as though reality were broken down into grains of sand, then built up again, the picture altered. It happened faster now, as though the screen of a film were flickering all around her, speeding through the life of the girl, the outcast. She could feel through the outcast's senses. Layla watched. The outcast found a new people with a new tongue. Some took pity on the unkempt child and bade her come with them into their homes. They gave her food to nourish and a place to rest, and yet a part of her could never rest and was never nourished. That part of her was separate, a dancing golden spark of light, waiting to be reborn. The outcast began to watch. On the periphery of towns and villages, she slipped into obscurity, cloaking herself with shadows. She spun murmurings of tales that left inquiring townsfolk little reason to remember her. She found it was easy to move through the world like that. And as a stranger, an outcast in violent men's lands, hiding herself in her coat was her freedom and her safety. She learnt to walk unnoticed, except by those whose souls she saw were harmless. She learnt to judge a man's heart by his hands and the shadows in his eyes, and to tell gluttons from the thieves who needed bread for hungry mouths. And in this way, she could almost live. Eventually, she found her head rested in one place for more than one moon cycle, for her heart felt settled there, and her bones ached for a place to rest. And so, she stayed. She found work in exchange for food and shelter, and took in the goodness and kindness of her new companions. But in the shadows, the rumours stirred. Travellers told of a young girl banished from her tribe because she had suffered shame. They sneered and laughed as they shared how the outcast had lost her family and her tribe and her honour, and now, alone and on the run, would be seeking a new place to stay and a new life to live, away from her past. How dare she? Women began to spit at the outcast's clothes as she walked past, suspecting as they did her origin and the disgrace she brought with her. The men leered and suggested they would take their comforts from her, as had been taken before. The townspeople hounded her and ran her out of their precious streets, and once more she found the loneliness of the road the safest comfort. She knew the berries and barks and brooks and the cries of beast and bird. She knew the scents and sounds of hunters and men and which to avoid and how to cover her tracks. And when she came to the next village, she did not give in to the cravings of her stomach and her aching heart, but instead clung to the shadows and veiled herself in the night and the whisperings of passing storms. It was there she saw the reflections of her own life in a young girl. She watched as a man, drunk, pink and sweating, fumbled around his crotch, eager to make use of finding the girl child alone in a quiet space. The outcast saw it all so clearly now. How the feebleness and flaws of men would always be excused, that it would always be for the women to bear the anguish of the world's persistent violence, unless revolution came. The outcast felt something rock in her belly and twist and burn, and then realised that she was not in her own body. She looked down at the young girl, face pressed into the wall by the man's grotesque hand, and she found that she smiled through his teeth. She flexed his fingers, wearing his body like a glove. She released the girl.
The outcast found the knife at the man's belt and made quick work of ensuring he could never allow his lust to overpower again. As the girl ran from the alley, the outcast felt her terror and relief. The outcast walked his bones with their bloody mess laid bare to the town square where bodies pressed and thrummed, and she proclaimed with his mouth and in his skin what it was that he had done and how he had been punished and how all men with evil hearts would be exposed for what they were, their very nature revealed and exhibited, and their weaknesses no longer to be borne by their victims. The outcast watched the world of men, and her power grew. She stayed in the shadows and cured the world of the weak, the ones to whom vices would crawl and sweet-talk in sunless moments, bidding them to defile and deface and destroy. And she would rid the streets of their madness, their filth, and move on to the next town. Across seas and high mountain passes she journeyed, she settled, and built with her own hands a shack of wood and stone and shadow amongst the wooded fringes of a strange town. The people there knew her for the incantations and curses she sold for bread and grain. They came to her with their violence, which she spun out in swift and supple rays of blood and misfortune. The leaders there, both afraid of and in need of her magic, let her be. And then she grew so tired. The outcast came to rest in familiar arms in a strange place. She was weary, and the palms of her hands and the soles of her feet and the chambers of her heart were stained dark with the deep red of blood. She longed to rest. "I missed you." The woman stroked the outcast's hair and face and hummed softly as she did so. "I know you did, sweetheart, and my heart is filled with joy that you are here." The outcast smiled a tired smile to herself and sank further into the elder's lap, allowing her warmth and the scent of her hair to soothe and comfort her. By now, the spark of life that had separated itself from her was dim and carried reverently in an amber locket around the outcast's neck. "And your mother sent you all this way by yourself, hmm?" The outcast tried to smile and hide the sharp pang that stung her when she thought of her mother so far away in the lands of the tribe. "She said it was time for me to find my path. I always felt such peace when you used to visit that I thought I would like to come to find you." "Hmm." The outcast sat up and looked at the elder with wide, bright eyes. "I thought perhaps I could stay with you for a while, learn from you how to use the sacred power and be a travelling healer like you." The woman smiled and gathered the outcast to her breast and murmured into her hair only practicalities. "The day is nearly out and night draws in fast here. Would you gather me wood for the fire?" The outcast nodded and left the hut and entered the dusk that had begun to settle around them. Dull orange glows from faraway hearths glimmered through the dense wood of the forest and punctuated the black of the shadows. She turned from the path and picked her careful way through the trees on the other side of the hut. A sound snapped. Her ears pricked. She held the breath in her lungs the way she had when tracking creatures of forest and mountain as a child. Nothing. But the fear stayed with her. She tried to tell herself that she could take on any enemy, that she was the beast with the most vicious teeth and the sharpest of talons, and that the forest could hold nothing as powerful as she was. Yet, the fear remained. Still, she gathered wood that was damp from the day's rain and asked herself why her friend would ask her to bring in soaked wood for a fire when she knew dried logs lay bundled under the raised floor of the hut. But she was desperate to rest, to trust. She carried the logs back in her arms and placed them at her friend's feet in the entranceway. She looked up at her friend. "I love you," she said. "I know, darling." The elder walked into her hut and left the outcast facing the forest. From among the trees stepped members of their tribe. Her mother stood in front of them and called to her, "My beautiful blood!" She ran forward and fell at the outcast's feet. "Forgive me, my daughter, how I have missed you!" Tears rolled down the outcast's cheek, but she stayed silent. "I tried for months to leave, to come to find you and bring you home, but I would have been shunned, dismissed from the tribe. You must understand. now to see you only when the tribe has had to hunt you down. It breaks me inside." Her mother wept and kissed her feet, begging forgiveness. The outcast shook her off. "And now you have found me again. Am I now once again part of the tribe?" Her mother fell silent. Another elder stepped forward from the trees. "You must pay for your deeds. It is the tribe's duty to answer for the troubles that stem from its source." As he spoke, more members of the tribe surfaced from the shadows around, all grim-faced with rope and chain and daggers and magic burning in their hands. The outcast laughed. It was high and manic. Her mother pleaded with her. "I beg you, do not fight them. Go willingly. You cannot continue this pain. Let it be ended." She kissed her daughter's face and walked back to her place in the crowd. The outcast allowed the men to bind her with chain, and whilst they busied themselves with their study of knots and fettles, she sought out their weaknesses. "Daughter of our beloved tribe, you have threatened the peace of our world and the mortal earth. For this, we must carry out our sacred duty and put you to death. Please submit to us your final words." The outcast let the little particles of her magic hunt out those weak places. She allowed her eyes to grow hard and fierce and her voice to sink low into her bound throat so that all around her had to strain their ears to hear her. She faced her friend, her betrayer. "This tribe values peace above all else, above the worth of the individual, above the needs of the individual. For that, they shall never have peace." She faced her mother. "I have fought my way here and saved the lives of many, many women, many children, and they will never suffer what I have suffered. The world has not had to bear their hurt and the sins of men who would have hurt them." Her mother's eyes shifted down to the dirt. The outcast turned once more to the elders. "I came here and sought rest, a new future of my own, with this pain behind me and peace ahead. And I am sorry." She took a deep breath and wriggled her shoulders against her chains. "But now I see I cannot have rest. Elder Law says that I must be punished for the things I have done and for the things that have been done to me." The men around began to feel an itch in their throats, just enough to scratch, to grate, but nothing more. Some coughed, but the itch remained. "I have been labelled, defiled, and been shamed, and cast out, and hounded, and judged, and abandoned." The itching was painful now, like tiny daggers cutting from their mouths to their lungs. "I have been labelled bad, and now," she said, raising her chin in triumph. "Now," she said through the voices of many and with the mouths of each man about the shadows. "Now I will be bad." Each man's guts burst open and shards of bone pierced through their eyes and flesh. The elder male and her betrayer and her mother screamed, but the outcast entered them in dust and air and played their bodies like no more than strung-up dolls. When she was done, the outcast stood tall in her garment of chains by the hut in the clearing of the woods. Then she shook the metal from her bones like it was drops of rain and painted her face with the blood of the fallen. With the dagger they had meant for her, she sliced the heart from the elder male's chest. She asked it carefully where she might find the son of the strange clan's leader, the one who had hurt her on the other side of the tundra, on the other side of her life. And she followed its dwindling beats into the forest and across the world toward her vengeance, high on somebody else's life. The image is blurred. The girl turned to look at Layla in the pine forest of the Elder Lands. Layla looked into the haunted, hunted eyes of the witch, the outcast, the girl. "Do you take delight in what you see? Is this the past I deserve?" "No, nobody deserves this. You should have been cared for." She felt the hatred slip away. Of course, she killed those who attacked her. In another life, perhaps Layla would have done the same. Let me talk to the elders. They'll realise what they did. They'll listen.
They won't.
They've changed. Everything's changed. So much has happened in the world since you were... What happened to you was...
It looked, for a moment, as though the witch was going to attack. There was a flash of the old viciousness that hummed through her. Layla stood her ground. Then something softened between them, and in that snippet of time, they were just two girls looking at each other across the abyss of fear.
I don't want your pity.
And I wouldn't give it. Layla stepped forward in the snow. Give me a chance. Let me try. Please. What's your name?
The outcast smiled. It was not unkind.
Who are you, Layla? Did you figure it out yet?
I wasn't there. I would have recognised myself, wouldn't I? I'm sorry if... Threads began to weave together in Layla's mind. Her heart plummeted, and she staggered backward on the snow as the shock reeled through her body.
The night sky shed us like glittering teardrops. A portion of us are reborn to protect the world.
She looked at the witch. What happened to that bit of you that broke away? Where did it go?
The witch's eyes stayed fixed on Layla's, but they were not unkind.
I protected that part of me as long as I could. It hurt too much to keep it inside. I thought perhaps if I made the world safe, that I could return it.
Her gaze shifted to somewhere between past and present, and she worried at her lower lip before returning her eyes to Layla.
But it always felt like there would be something out there to hurt you, to attack us. And at some point, we just drifted apart.
The witch's gaze held Layla's steadily.
Do you remember yet? She whispered.
No, Layla said. She'd known, on some level she'd known, but she couldn't accept it. No, no, she said again, hoping that by repeating the word like a mantra she could push the truth away.
The witch stepped forward, imploring.
I did the ugly things to protect us, to make a world where you wouldn't have to be scared, where you wouldn't feel what I felt.
The witch edged forwards again, her face scrunched, pleading.
Gone was the rage that Layla had seen before. Gone was the menace. Layla could see now that she was just a terrified girl lashing out in fear. Her goodness and softness and morals had been carved out and boxed away to be protected and kept from harm. And that protected jumble of hope was who Layla was.
After you left me, all I wanted was for you to come back. I didn't know if we would be whole again, but I need you. I've done all this for you, for us.
The witch's face crumpled as she saw Layla's fearful retreat. I've had centuries bound within that tree to think about what I've done. I've forgotten the other way. I've forgotten how not to kill. And this is why I need you. I need to have that part of me back to heal. I need you back, please.
The witch clutched at Layla's arm and it all flashed into Layla's mind. She felt everything, remembered everything. It toppled her, took her breath away, and she gasped, trying to find her feet and her own body, trying to remember who she was. Who she is? Layla swallowed. She looked at the witch. Her monster self. This was the part of her that had split itself off and used itself as a shield when it had felt like there was no other way out. When it had felt like the world was ending. It had protected her and planted her like a seed to be nurtured, even as it had wrought havoc on those she loved most.
You've endured so much pain, she whispered.
The girl sat abruptly in the snow, and her heart cracked open. Tears poured down her face.
I don't want to be this anymore. I want more. Help me.
Sobs racked her body, and Layla felt the urge to reach out and soothe her. But how could she find compassion for the thing that had killed those she loved? Even if it was somehow her. She thought again of her mother, Sam, Jacob.
I'm sorry. I can't.
The girl looked up at Layla, disbelief and pain twisting her features.
She scrubbed the tears from her face and it hardened. The witch let out an agonized shriek, but it was more reminiscent of a child's tantrum than evil. A blizzard leapt up around her, obscuring Layla's vision with a tumultuous wall of impenetrable snow. Then, as suddenly as it had started, the blizzard stopped and Layla was standing alone once more. There were no footsteps to trace, but a lone wail rang through the pines. The crow returned and harried Layla through the trees. Unthinking, she ran, following its path. When Layla could run no more, it swooped and dropped from the air and scratched at the stone entrance of the roundhouse. But it would not enter. Layla heard the sounds of struggle from within. She hesitated, her breath uncontrolled and desperate, but she knew, deep in her heart, what she had to do. She stepped into the shadows.
How long will it take?
Elliot was pacing back and forth across the grass in the twilight. The fire still burned and lit the crooks of the rock with ochre. Jacob had curled up next to its shelter and fallen into a sleep punctuated by nightmares, which made him twitch every so often, and in turn made the others jump. Lorna walked over to Elliot.
I don't know.
There may be some time. If you want to head back, I'm happy to.
No, I'd rather wait.
Thanks, Lor. Will Violet come back? Lorna eyed Elliot with steady and uncompromising compassion.
It's hard to say. She might. The witch won't live in her anymore, but she will be in great pain. All that's happened to her won't be healed. She won't be the same.
Elliot studied the contours of Lorna's face, saw the shadows nesting there.
What needs to be done?
Lorna's speech was slow, kindly.
We lay her to rest, bury her in the ocean. With the witch gone and Layla's magic controlled, there won't be enough energy for her to come back from that. She'll be free.
Elliot nodded.
And what about Layla?
Lorna laid a hand on Elliot's and they stood staring at one another in the field. Elliot looked away.
We just have to wait. There's nothing more we can do.
He thought and spoke as though trying to reach out from a no man's land the world never knew existed.
I saw some things, Lor. At the tree. Things I'd done, I don't know that I can forgive myself.
There was no trace of self-pity in his voice, only calm. Steady recognition.
The deaths in the village.
Elliot nodded. Lorna took a moment before she spoke.
That wasn't you. All those things you saw, terrible things, you didn't do them, Elliot. She might have made you think you did, but it was her. She killed them.
He shook his head.
I killed someone. Lots of people. I killed the woman at the carnival. And I killed Sam. And I would have killed you and Layla and Jacob too if...
You killed Sam. They looked around. Jacob was on his feet and staring straight at Elliot.
Jacob, you killed Sam and I'm out here helping you. Why? So you can kill more of us. I can't believe this.
Jacob picked up his jacket and began to walk back to the village.
Jacob, wait. He didn't know. The witch had him. He didn't have a choice. Yeah, I know. I've been there too, remember? It doesn't mean I'm going to stick around and play nice.
Jacob, wait. Jacob's jacket fell to the floor. His hand found a rock, smooth and weighty in his palm.
I've had enough. I'm going home. Leave me alone.
Jacob,
Don't do that. Don't give excuses. Don't apologise.
He took a step forward and raised his arm, rock held high, ready. Then he let his arm fall, and the rock dropped from his hand into the dirt.
I'm going home, he repeated. I can't help how I feel, just leave me alone.
The hearth's fire was left untended. Billows of smoke curled around and obscured the thatch and stone of the ancient roundhouse. Layla crept in, listening. At first, the sounds weren't clear. They seemed to come from every direction, whispers of echoes rebounding in the gloom. She pressed her face into the nook of her arm and stepped further into the suffocating clouds.
Scuffling sounded from beyond the fire. Layla summoned to mind all the teachings and charms and incantations her aunt had taught her over the span of summer. But nothing seemed right.
Not knowing what else to do, she sealed the roundhouse around them and brought all the courage she had into that place, and with the pads of her fingers, followed the curve of the wall around to the source of the disquiet.
Grey shapes danced, fought. Layla heard the screams of the witch and the cries from the hearth-tender and rushed forward into the chaos. The hearth-tender had a sputtering ball of lightning in her hands. The witch, now behind Layla, had conjured flames to her fingertips. "Move aside, child!"
Rough hands pushed her to the ground, but before she could pull herself up, her ears filled with a sound abysmal and raking, as though a mountain was screaming. Light filled every crack and shadow, and the hearth fire swelled outward, its blazing fire eradicating all darkness and air within its grasp. At the centre of it stood the witch, flames crawling up her arms. She was drinking it in, absorbing it into her. She meant to consume the hearth fire.
"Wait!" Layla cried. She could see the witch's face now. Despite the heat from the fire, tears ran down her cheeks. Torment contorted her features, making her look once more like the monster so many had seen her as.
"Stop! I'll take you back!"
The hearth tender's eyes grew wide.
"What are you doing?"
Layla dragged herself to her feet and found the edges of the fabric of the world. She dragged them outward, made a shield, and stepped forward into the inferno.
"I'm ready!" she yelled over the roar.
The witch, the girl, the outcast looked at her with solemn eyes. Her breath was ragged, her face pained and desperate.
"You think I'm a monster?"
"Child," growled the hearth tender. "Our sister tried to destroy us, destroy humanity. She intended to reduce the hearth to the coldest ash. Instead, we can use her spirit to rekindle its flames. She will remain there under our care until she finds atonement."
The hearth tender took a step forward.
"So move aside, or I'll kill you both."
The hearth tender's magic broiled, and Layla felt the witch's instinct to retaliate stir.
"No," she said, and to the hearth tender, "she's mine. She is who I am. I take responsibility for her. Leave us alone, and I promise neither one of us will feel the need to defend ourselves."
Her jaw clenched. She'd never felt more certain of who she was than in that moment.
She will be loved and cared for, tended to.
She wanted understanding, Layla said, her voice hitching.
She needs love and comfort, not exile. She shouldn't be kept on the edge of death in perpetual torment because you're afraid of something you created.
Layla extended the shield to cover the witch within its safety, staring at the hearth tender defiantly. Breath by breath, her doubt diminished. The hearth tender paused and seemed to consider Layla's words. Eventually, she spoke.
"If you are prepared to take this part of you back into yourself and heal it, we shall allow you to do so."
She lowered her hands, the lightning diffusing into the smoky air. Her brow creased and then softened.
"The wise elders of the tribe were once not so wise. And while we cannot take back what we've done, we can and must ensure no further harm is caused."
Layla nodded and bit her lip. She tried not to think about what would come next. She turned to the witch.
"You're right. I did think you were a monster. You did terrible things," she said.
"We did terrible things." Layla stared into her protector's eyes, the hearth fire still raging all around them. The things she'd done, they'd done, already weaving themselves into Layla's memory as having been done by her own hand. The pain of absorbing these memories felt like knives in her chest.
As though she knew, the witch bent down in the midst of the fire and held out her hand. The torrent of flames quieted.
"I didn't want you to have these in your head," the witch said. "Or any of it. To be a part of any of it. I wanted you to live. Free."
"I know," Layla said. The hearth fire now quiet, Layla lowered her shield. She reached out an uncertain hand.
"Thank you for protecting me."
The girl shook. Her tears flowed freely down her cheeks.
"I lost my way. I killed so many."
"I know. But you don't need to be that way anymore. We can deal with whatever comes next together."
"You have to invite me in,"
she said, and Layla heard the rawness of her hope. Layla took the witch's hands in her own, pulled her toward her, cradled the girl's head to her chest, and welcomed the outcast home. End of chapter 25. Twisted Roots was published by Wild Wolf Publishing and is available on Kindle via Amazon or as a downloadable PDF via my website. The links for both of these are in the description of this podcast. You can follow me on social media at twisted_roots_agparker or a_g_parker on Instagram. Please head to my website for other details and to keep updated with my poetry, performances, fiction, articles, and more. I hope you enjoyed listening to this latest chapter of Twisted Roots and that you tune in next time.